Si baba
Bonyama
Now what's on the menu? It could be some beach eggs to you. It's Boomba.
I gotta tell you, Timon, that song always gets me right here.
Yeah, Pumba. Well, enough of that.
Timon, what are you doing?
I'm fast-forwarding to the part where we come in.
But you can't go out of order.
Au contraire, my porcine pal. I've got the remote.
But everyone's gonna get confused. We gotta go back to the beginning of the story.
We're not in the beginning of the story.
Yes, we were, the whole time.
Yeah, but they don't know that.
Then why don't we tell them our story?
Hey, I've got an idea. Why don't we tell them our story?
Oh, I like the sound of that.
A little backstage tour. Take them behind the scenes for a revealing and intimate look at the story within the story.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Awimoe. What's... You guys are just going to leave my Awimoe hanging? Is that what you're going to do?
Hey, you didn't go far enough.
You didn't do it long enough.
Do you want me to start again?
We're going
to
jump in at the appropriate spot.
You don't,
we need
you
at
don't
least
just,
three more Awimoes.
You don't just leave an Awimoe hanging, man.
Yeah, but
you can't leave my Awimoe hanging.
I needed at least three more Awimoes.
At least more Awimoes. Okay, so I jumped the gun by getting mad at you for not... Because you can't leave an Awimoe hanging.
Oh, no.
I probably didn't get to the Awimoe that you needed me
we
to get to.
We wanted the lead-in. Yes.
Yes.
You were three Awimoes away.
That's three... How many Awimoes does it take to get to the beginning of the song? Well, in this jungle, the mighty jungle, we're going to talk about the lion and the king and other animals. Yeah, because we're going to be talking about the Lion King this week from 1994, a childhood favorite for many of you.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a kid anymore when this came out. I was 21. Now I'm one of my favorites. But I was never a fan of the musical ones. And then we're going to be talking about the other animated film from 2019. I can't call it a live action, but I'll call it animated to reality.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
Almost reality. They're still genderless, so I guess not.
But it's the uncanny valley.
You can't have lions swinging balls in... a near realistic version.
No.
I was reading the production head at Disney was saying that it's kind of like it's not really animated and it's also not really live action because it's kind of like a hybrid of a bunch of evolutions of technology. It's kind of its own thing that there's not really a description for yet.
That's right. Let me do the introductions. That was Jeff Omega.
Oh, hello.
and Trish Coughlin.
Hey, everybody.
And Sam, he's got to work. Day job sometimes runs across the record day. So I chose The Lion King because he specifically says he didn't want to be here for it. He rarely makes a request like that. But oftentimes when I make him watch something he thinks he's going to hate, he's going to love it. Almost every time, actually.
That's the beautiful thing about experiencing things outside of your comfort zone.
Right?
Yes. You might find a new love in your life, and you just didn't know about it.
He used to say the same things about anything that was black and white, really. And now he really enjoys those older episodes when we tackle something from the 40s and 50s. So,
oh, for sure.
And hopefully our listeners experience the same thing. Hopefully you go watch these movies along with us. It's not required, yes. But, you know, might enhance the flavors. Although I'm sure everybody's seen The Lion King at this point multiple times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually have The Lion King in my collection, and I was, why do I have this? Why did I buy this? I don't even like it that much. I mean, it is great. It really is. I mean, it was just, I don't know, not fond of stuff with music, and the music's great. It really is. But I realized, I'm like, oh, the disc sitting next to it was why I bought the original, because I wanted to watch Lion King 1 1/2. So I bought the other one, yes, because it was in platinum release at the time, because I needed to watch that to understand the other one, which is just the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of The Lion King, which was, yes, loosely based on the concept of Hamlet. Mm-hmm. So you I love that exists.
It's actually pretty good. I watched it again right after watching Lion King yesterday.
As did I. And I still love it.
It holds up, actually. Yeah,
I can't remember. Was it you, Trish, who did not like that movie?
No, I told you.
Somebody was disparaging the good goddamn name of Timon and Pumbaa, and I want to know who the fuck it was.
Oh, it wasn't me, but it was something I told you about. Another sort of stand-up had done a thing where 1 1/2 basically makes it so that the end, the children want to see Lion King, and at the end of Lion King, they want to see 1 1/2, and then 1 1/2 makes them want to see Lion King, and it puts them in a loop, and it's very upsetting.
Well, there is a 2, much like most Disney things, especially when they make this much goddamn money, they last forever. They actually did a sequel, and then they did the midquel, which was 1 1/2, so Lion King 2 actually came out before Lion King 1 1/2. And then there was a Timon and Pumbaa television series, and more recently, the Lion Guard series. There were 3 video games, the puppet show type parade at Disney World, the very successful stage production. I don't know. There's probably Lion King on Ice.
There has to be.
There has to be. Comic books, toys. It's everywhere, and it's been ever pervasive since 1994.
It's really the movie that reinvigorated Disney animation.
Well, I don't know if it reinvigorated. I mean, it was definitely part of that golden era that kind of, what was it, began with Little Mermaid? I want to say Little Mermaid was the first of that cycle of success after success after success, Lion King being the 32nd animated feature at Walt Disney. And
it really took the world by storm, though. Like, it did. Lion King was huge, but more so than the other ones.
Yeah, but there wasn't much after that, because I think like Beauty and the Beast was before this, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Lion King kind of was like, here's the last of the really great era before we get into things like Brother Bear, which is not bad either. But they weren't ever going to make the $1 billion again.
No. And it was, but this movie, I have to say, when you say, like, you don't like musical stuff is what, like, you say, but this one, I feel that the music of this one was just on a completely different level than any other Disney movie they had done up until this point.
Tim Rice was on a roll with the music, and Hans Zimmer coming in to do an animated score, something he wasn't really comfortable doing. But by the end of the experience, it was one of his most fulfilling ever. And then you got Elton John coming in to do songs for this, which they almost left out the one he won the Oscar for. They had shown the movie to him, and he was like, no, you can't leave out the love song. And in the end, he was right, because he won an Oscar for it.
You know, Disney has this trend I've noticed, especially in that era where they're producing movies, and then they always want to take out the love song, or like the slower song, or the song that establishes the relationship between two characters, because they also wanted to take out the song from The Muppet Christmas Carol of Belle breaking up with Scrooge. And that's kind of like the emotional heart of the movie. But they're like, this is boring. Kids don't want to hear a love song.
Yeah, executives. No.
I just don't feel they have love in their lives, so they don't understand why they need it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And it would have been the last one that Jeffrey Katzenberg ushered in for Disney before moving over to found DreamWorks Animation. And I don't know if Disney was ever left the same without Katzenberg. It would take them buying Pixar to kind of find it again.
Lion King came out in 1994 and Toy Story came out in 1995. And it really feels like there is a huge shift. Like, you know, I'm as much a fan of Mulan or Hercules or Tarzan as anyone, but like Pixar really picks up this torch of it's the best animated movie that you're going to see. And that was Disney for a period.
Yeah, I would love to see them go back to some traditional animation again. Fuck, at least anybody at this point, the hand-drawn style. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could still do it via computer and fool me. I'm fine with that, but I miss that 2D styling so much. When I turn on my Disney Plus, I am more likely to watch one of the more traditional 2D animations than the 3D ones. And it's not to disparage the effort that goes into it, but I don't know, maybe it's just because in my mind, like, I'm a process guy and I know a bunch of people did this, and physical cells exist for this thing. And even though there's like a freaking army of people who work on those Pixar movies, nothing actually exists on paper. Maybe some sketches and design work, but not much exists. And I don't know. It to me, that's less satisfying. It's certainly no less work. It's just a different kind of work and a different kind of art that doesn't appeal to me as much as the hand-drawn style.
Well, and I feel like I can speak for probably all of us when I can say that, like, when you watch any of these 2D animated movies, like, you know that it's animated, and then you'll see a little behind the scenes snippet that they used to have at like the beginning of the VHS releases and stuff, where there's an animator and then he's drawing something that you've seen in a movie and he's flipping back and forth with the paper to, you know, do the in-betweens. And there's just something about how you can watch that and you have this thought in your head that if you sit down with a whole bunch of paper, you could also make animation. And I don't feel like anyone watches something that's hyper photorealistic or 3D and thinks to themselves, that's something that I, not only I can do, but that's something that I want to do.
Well, I remember being a little kid and having a whole thing where it's like, okay, you got a notebook and you put like a little thing in each corner and then you can make it move if you really, really put in all that effort. It was like, it was so achievable. But I think with the 2D animation, part of it is I kind of enjoy the lack of like real world peril. Like, it's sort of if the animals are too realistic, I know they're eating and killing each other. Whereas if they're 2D, I can kind of put that away a bit. And also you can have those magical moments where he's like, I just can't wait to be king. And it's got elephants and it's giraffes on on anteaters, on elephants, and then an ostrich at the top. And it's just more entertaining.
It's that big like stage show presentation that you're not going to get in a hyper realistic one because they want it to feel real. So you're not going to do the big stage show that is utterly ridiculous, that you're only going to show in animation, which is odd because I'd like to remind you, it's still fucking animation. Unlike when we cover The Jungle Book, which is still Jon Favreau, there at least was like one person in there, a real person. There's nobody real in here. There's like one shot he snuck in. They flew to Africa to shoot to see if anybody will notice. It's right at the beginning. But I mean, technical achievement aside, I mean, it's a huge technical achievement. You watch that thing, it's like, wow. I mean, Yep, that looks pretty fucking real. And oh my God, those kittens are so adorable.
Yeah, like it honestly, like I actually really liked the remake, if anything, because it really was the most amazing visual effects I've ever seen in a movie. Like, it was incredible.
Yeah, but at 2 hours, it does start to wear me down a little bit. It just, I don't know. I'm not sure what it is. Like, I liked it about the same. It lingers on scenes that could use a little bit more time, or you could see that circle of life a little more well illustrated, or when you're seeing Simba spending more time at that oasis with Timon and Pumbaa growing up during that song. I mean, all that stuff kind of makes sense, and it feels, because I watched these in reverse because I was a little more familiar with the animated one. I did the same thing with Jungle Book when we covered that. Like, you can see why they did what they did. I often see comments about the remake being a heartless shot-for-shot reimagination. I can't fully argue with that, but I'm like, heartless? I definitely could. There was lots of times I was like, oh, that's clever. I like how they handled Scar a little bit better in that, but you can't argue with Jeremy Irons either.
So I think overall, I liked Jeremy Irons' Scar better just because. So there's this whole thing where, like, that I wasn't aware of until yesterday, where there's a lot of people who talk about how Disney maybe codes a lot of their villains as queer characters, and how people are upset over how there's people with maybe queer tendencies who are villainous, and Scar is kind of listed as one of those. And I've not ever once watched Lion King and thought that Scar was effeminate or queer or gay in any way.
Not
I've
at all.
I always felt like he's very theatrical and very much like a Shakespearean plotting,
now,
intelligent.
Jeremy Irons has a wee bit of a lisp. You can kind of hear it when he's talking. Go back and look at some of his older stuff. And I think that's maybe where that comes from. But I would have never made that association with that character. They've just, with that villain in particular, or most villains really, they never show any kind of relationship or sexual attraction or any kind of attraction to opposite or other. You know, they're interested in their own interests. And I mean, romantic aspirations are low on the priority poll for most villains, which is why we never get anything with them in that regard. I mean, there was a subplot that they trashed where he was going to make moves on Nala, but thank God they didn't.
Well, I mean, the whole thing too is there's one major point of all of this that just gets glossed over where, like the lionesses are just sister wives. I mean, know this. Mufasa isn't just that. It's not just that one lioness he's banging. Just saying, like Nala is probably Simba's like step sibling.
Possibly. Furthest.
Yeah, they're I did look at some of the lineage of those characters, and Nala is supposed to be like the daughter of another chieftain from another Lion King from another tribe. But
only because somebody brought it
pride.
Up.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody brought it up, and then they like, well, okay, let's define this, and it's probably been more
They retconned it.
Well, yeah, and it's probably in some of that TV material we've never seen before. Just like at the end of The Lion King, we're supposed to assume that that's the new Prince Simba's son, but it's actually a daughter that gets retconned in later, and that's fine. Yeah. Disney can do what they want with it, and oftentimes Disney's, when they get criticized, they'll try to find ways around a controversy that, face it, the internet oftentimes is just trying to find something to nitpick about. And,
I'm just saying, this is about lions, and that's fine. The gay thing, I didn't quite get why they got on that with Scar, but like, no, why are we ignoring the sister wife area? That's just something that is going to happen.
If we really want to get into it, the portrayals of the hyenas is very unfair. Hyenas aren't scavengers as much as this movie portrays. No. They're actually more honorable than lions. Lions are more often would probably scavenge a hyena kill rather than the other way around. And lions are more apt to attack and kill and even eat each other. Hyenas won't do that.
Hyenas work together a lot better than lions do.
Yeah, I actually really liked, it's great having Cheech Marin as hyena in the original one, but I really liked what they did with the hyenas in the remake, and the banter with Eric Andre and Keegan-Michael Key was really good.
Yeah, and I get why they had to do that. Their characters are a little too silly in the cartoon to transfer over to a hyper-realistic style and still not take you out of that hyper-realism. It would feel too much like a cartoon. And I'm sure that was the decision behind it more than anything else. There was some criticism about the hyenas as portraying Black and Hispanics as villains. And I'm like, there were other Black people in Lion King your Lion King, Mufasa, was James Earl Jones, a Black dude. Yeah. So, yeah. People will find shit to bitch about. That's how it is.
I kind of...
I'm glad there were more Africans in the remake.
I kind of disagree with the hyenas in the remake. Like, I mean, they seemed actually to me more fooled by Scar. Whereas in the original, like, I mean, you have Whoopi Goldberg who's like, stupid. Like, she's mad at the lion. She's like, they're just pushing everybody around. Like, I could see the hyena's motivation more in the original than I saw in the remake. And they seem to have more agency in the original than in the remake.
Interesting. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. Well, let's address some more of that right after the trailer for the original Lion King from 1994. Your childhood will welcome it.
Circle of Life. Walt Disney Pictures presents its all-new 30-second full-length animated motion picture, The Lion King. He was born to rule.
This will all be mine?
Everything the light touches.
Wow.
But a shadow lies over the kingdom.
I will be king.
Run away and never return.
No! If you ever come back, we'll kill you!
Hey, kid, what's eating you?
I don't want to talk about it.
He looks blue.
I'd say brownish gold.
No. I mean, he's depressed.
Anything we can do?
Not unless you can change the past.
He grew up hoping to leave his old life behind.
I know who you are. You're Mufasa's boy.
You're the king.
King? Have you got your lions crossed?
You know my father?
Correction. I know your father.
He died. A long time ago.
Nope! Wrong again!
He's alive! And I'll show him to you!
Father?
You are my son, and the one true king.
You see, he lives in you.
You must take your place in the circle of life.
Simba!
It's a legendary tale filled with excitement, plus dozens of wonderful new characters.
Why do I always have to save you?
And featuring original music and songs by Grammy winner Elton John and Academy Award winner Tim Rice. Walt Disney Pictures presents an entertainment event you'll never forget.
That was The Lion King from 1994, with more script and story contributors that I care to list, 29 in total. So go look it up. I am not going over all of them, so do your own damn research on that one. This was directed by Roger Allers and Rob Minkoff. Roger Allers would do Open Season after this, and Rob Minkoff was instrumental in the Haunted Mansion adaptation. This stars the voices of Matthew Broderick as Simba, who we talked about in episode 39, Lady Hawk, and then Jeremy Irons as Scar, the villain here. You might remember him from Dead Ringers. And given his resume, oh my God, how have we not talked about Jeremy Irons up to this point?
Yeah, that's actually surprising. He's a very underrated actor.
Right?
I thought we had.
So amazing. So amazing. And there's a good chance I missed it. I just started getting tunnel vision scrolling through all of his
accolades. Too much.
It's too much. James Earl Jones, we've talked about several times. The first time was in an episode 40, which was actually Conan. Actually, that's not true. The first time was episode 23, which was Star Wars, and then we do it again in 123 and 223. So we've talked about three Star Wars on separate occasions, and Conan in episode 40. Whoopi Goldberg was Shenzi, the lead hyena, and we did get a chance to talk about in episode 232, Rat Race.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes,
along with Rowan Atkinson, who plays Zazu, who's also in Rat Race. And we talked about him again in episode 34, way back when we talked about Never Say Never Again, which was the remake of Thunderball. James Bond.
I completely forgot about that.
Right.
What was he in that?
He was just a humorous sidekick. He was would the office relay to James Bond.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Nikita Kalam Harris was young Nala. Jim Cummings was the laughing hyena Ed. Robert Guillaume was Rafiki, who would star in famous TV shows like Benson and the underrated Sports Night. Go watch Sports Night. It was fantastic. Moira Kelly was Nala, who you probably caught in person on One Tree Hill. Zoe Leader was Serafina. Nathan Lane was Timon. And He was in The Birdcage, and hopefully we'll talk about that someday. Well, most likely, because it was a remake. Ernie Sabella was Pumbaa, and he was in episode 207. We talked about The Out-of-Towners. Cheech Marin, another guy I can't believe we've never talked about. He was Banzai, another hyena. Probably still most famous for Up in Smoke, but he's been in a ton of shit since then. Jonathan Taylor Thomas was very famous for Home Improvement. He played young Simba in this movie. And of course, we gotta mention Frank Welker, because he did all the lion roars in this. Frank Megatron Welker, who's probably more famous for Megatron and not so famous for all the animals he's done. There was not a single actual real lion roar in this movie, because that was all Frank Welker, and they wanted to control the lion roars and make it sound unique to each lion. That guy was incredible.
For, Scooby-Doo?
Yeah.
Wow.
Incredible doing animal voices and animal sounds. They're very convincing.
I don't know if you were able to find this, because I couldn't find anything about it. Do you know if they used either stock sounds that he recorded, or if they used him again at all for the lion roars for the remake, or if that's just actual lion roars in the remake?
To be honest, I don't know. I never saw his name in the credits for the remake, so they may have used some stock sounds or gotten some lion roars, but I mean, now we're at a point where they can manipulate those sounds to do what they want, so they could be completely manufactured for all I know. It did feel like at times there was a tinniness to them, so I wouldn't be surprised that there was some manufacturing happening with that.
One time I was working at the Banff World Media Festival, and Nathan Lane was getting a Lifetime Achievement Award there, and there was an after party that they were going to, and on his way to the party, Nathan Lane made a pass at me. Well, he hit on me. It was funny.
What?
It was like, yeah, I felt weirdly flattered that Nathan Lane would hit on me.
He's like 30 years your senior.
Why wouldn't you?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was
that feels a little awkward.
Yeah, it was strange, but
welcome to being a woman. It's great. That happens a lot.
I was like, well, this guy is great in the remake of The Producers. He's, you know,
the voice cage.
He's great in The Birdcage. Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
What a character.
I thought he was great, and he would do Timon quite a bit after Lion King. He'd come back to that over and over and over again. I guess you don't, you know, like, that's a free lunch, man. You got a Disney character that resonates that well. Yeah, I would go back to it too. I'm honestly surprised that a lot of this cast wasn't invited back to do the live action. Yeah. James Earl Jones was, and it does feel like a different performance. I mean, you're getting James Earl Jones in his late 80s doing Mufasa rather than at 63 when he did the original. The timbre of his voice is very different, where it's very thunderous in the original animation. It's a little more older and laid back, and it does give the sense that Mufasa's been around for a while and leading this pride, which I think did work for the character in the long run, because he didn't quite have the thunderous timbre to his voice anymore. It's still very strong, but it's not the same.
What a amazing.
Well,
voice.
I think with this one, what they want to do is, like, at least in the original, is the voice actors who spoke were not the ones singing most of the time. I mean, Matthew Broderick didn't sing anything as far as I knew, and Jonathan Taylor Thomas didn't at all.
You're right.
I don't know the person who voiced Nala. I do not think she sang either. So it was like, well, let's just get singers, actors who can sing, or singers who can act, and do it that way.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I did read that Jeremy Irons had expressed interest in returning as Scar, so I don't know what happened with that. Chidiwell Ejiofor is a great actor, but I do think that Jeremy Irons' characterization of Scar was much better, because he came across a lot more frustrated in the new one, rather than scheming in the original one.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought the way they handled Scar in the remake, like, his intelligence shows in both, but boy, he was a really master manipulator, I thought, in the remake.
Yeah.
He feels more convincing in the lie, where it sounds like somebody who's trying to throw one over you in the animation, where he's supposed to come off a little more obvious and villainous, right?
Yeah, it's more cartoonish, essentially. is what Jeremy Irons' portrayal is. And I also like kind of in the remake what they did with Scar, just visually having to make him like in the original. I got very distracted by like the green eyes and the green yellow eyes. That was a strange choice, and I didn't realize that I didn't notice it before. But in the remake, when they made him kind of like, he has kind of a manky mane, and he looks kind of like checkered with like old hair, and he just seems like he's been around and he's seen a lot, but it's not been great. I really like that choice.
Yeah, it looks like he's been through some shit.
Yeah.
I did think probably it all comes down for me between the two of them, the moment where he's supposed to help Mufasa and then he says, "Long live the king." I feel like the scene and how they set it up and the vocal performances were much stronger in the animated one versus the remake, even though the scene was ultimately very similar. It was much more sinister in the original one, whereas in the remake it was shouting that line doesn't really have the same impact.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting because when you watch these scenes, like so much of this is stripped from the original, like the shots and the lines there, and it's just the change in delivery or lingering on a scene more is what adds to the time. I think there was an extra song in here as well for the remake, but it's interesting to see how just that line delivery from a different actor will change the resonance of that line.
Mm-hmm. Like I was saying to Leah as well, not just to dissect the two scenes, but I guess it's part of what we do anyway, but because they're basing it on something that's existing, every choice that they made about it in the remake is a deliberate choice. So when Mufasa is hanging from the cliff wall and he's saying Scar, brother, the omission of him calling Scar his brother in the remake, I also thought was an interesting choice because I feel like that also added to the resonance of the scene in the original one.
I do see that. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard. They're both, I will tell you, both times I cried when Mufasa died. So they both delivered on that for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I can't say that happened with me, but at this point, Disney's made me numb to them killing parents.
But they killed the dad this time, which is an unusual choice for Disney.
True. They did keep mom alive.
Exactly. I have a question for you both, and I don't know if this is something that I sort of noticed or you did. In the original, it felt like there was more of an established relationship between Scar and the hyenas. And in the remake, it felt like it was just starting when he came to them with a scheme about killing Mufasa.
Okay.
You know, that came across to me as well, actually.
Yeah. Was there a question in there?
Yeah. I was just like, did you see it as I saw it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because like I said, I watched them in reverse and it did feel like while he's familiar with the hyenas, it's more through his relationship with Mufasa than anything else. And this was an opportunity for him, and he was quietly manipulating these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, yeah, it felt like in the original, he had a long-standing relationship with them by feeding them and bringing them food so they would do his bidding.
Yeah.
But when he brought them the zebra, like, that's what that establishes, that they've had this relationship for a while, and they are essentially his thugs.
Yeah. Like, nice. It felt like they screwed up a plan that he had already put in motion by having Simba come to the elephant graveyard, versus in the remake, he sent Simba to the elephant graveyard hoping that the hyenas would take him out.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't necessarily part of his plan.
Well, and I mean, in the hyenas' defense in both movies, it's hard to fulfill somebody's plan when they didn't tell you what the plan was.
Right?
they were going to screw with the cubs no matter what, and ultimately we're looking at a free lunch. But at the same time, they were toying with them, and especially in the original, they were toying with their food a lot, and oftentimes it got away, and they didn't care because they just liked that they got to mess with something.
Yeah.
So
they
wanted
to have a cub sandwich.
Yeah. So Scar, you can't be mad at somebody screwing up your plan when they didn't know what the plan was. Just
saying.
Absolutely.
I mean,
but that's the master manipulator in him trying to lead everybody, and plausible deniability. He is the king at plausible deniability. You know, he told Simba not to go to this place, knowing full well when you tell a kid not to do something, they're going to fucking do it.
Right. And you tell them something cool like, oh my God, elephant graveyard? I have to go see it.
Let's go poke dead things.
Right? The original, though, I did find the elephant graveyard a lot more, I don't know, I found it scarier in the 2D. I don't know if you guys felt the same.
I mean, there's a bleakness to that scene in the remake, but I don't know, when he's like crawling in skulls and stuff. Yeah, it's actually kind of creepier in the original. I think I would agree with you there. Like, mm-hmm. the tone and tenor of it, but at the same time, kittens don't seem to be too bothered by how creepy it is.
Right?
Kittens.
Well,
their kittens
are like, oh my god, so cool. We're being bad and it's dangerous and we gotta go here and just see the cool stuff.
And they are little bastards of poor Zazu, who does seem to disappear in the original film, whereas he feels a little more ever presence in the remake, and I think that was with purpose, because Zazu does kind of seem to disappear once the characters go into adulthood. And I got to give Favreau a little bit of credit where, you know, you had the opportunity with the hyper-realistic animation to be able to gray up the fur a little bit and show the progression of age as you're growing Simba into adulthood. And the much older friends of Timon and Pumbaa would have a little bit of gray in them now. And I kind of appreciated that. That's something your 2D animation couldn't do. Nobody ages, except for Simba and Nala.
One thing I liked a lot about the remake is, so Jon Favreau, in approaching it, was kind of taking, obviously, a lot of cues from the original movie, taking some aspects that he liked from the Broadway show, and also being really inspired by nature documentaries. And I really liked the nature documentary aspect to the remake, in terms of, like, there was a lot of pieces where, you know, when he's singing I Just Can't Wait to Be King, the musical number is better in the original one, but at the same time, in the remake, it kind of being a showcase of all of these different animals that, you know, are fake, but they're very, very realistically rendered. I liked how there was a lot of times where you felt like you were watching a story about animals that, you know, this is what animals do when people are not around, if that makes any sense.
It's the Toy Story theory, Far Side theory.
Exactly what I was going to say. I'm like, this is the same kind of thing, the same kind of idea of Toy Story. You throw a human in the mix and then nobody's going to be doing that stuff.
Yeah.
Does make you wonder how many musical numbers are going on.
Right?
In the back of my mind, though, like, maybe it's just because I know cats are assholes and bigger cats are probably going to be bigger assholes. I'm like, this wouldn't happen. Lions are lazy. Actually, I actually do have to give them a little bit of credit for doing things that are kind of true to the animals. We've kind of discussed a little bit of stuff that isn't, but with the hyenas, it is matriarchal. So it was nice to have a female leading in both packs. And male lions are inherently lazy. So when you have Simba just growing up and having the good life and not wanting to give that up, I mean, it is driven by PTSD and guilt. But yeah, so he's binge eating. At least he's not eating his friends, but you know, he's binge eating insects because they're readily available.
Well, as a lion, he's getting a lot of protein, which insects have.
Oh, yeah. Turning him into, I don't know, so somebody told me, like, they turned him into vegetarian. I'm like, he's eating insects. That's not vegetable.
Yeah. No.
That's like when my friends tell me they're vegetarians and still eat chicken and fish. And I'm like, no, you're not. Just have a steak with me.
If anything,
either commit or don't.
Fish breathe, it's in water, but they breathe. If you're eating something that breathes, there you go.
Yeah, you're not a vegetarian if you're eating something that breathes. Now, if you say you don't eat red meat, then fine, but don't call yourself a vegetarian, because you're not.
As the great Kurt Cobain once said, it's okay to eat fish because they don't have any feelings.
Oh, you don't know.
But they do have lungs.
No, I mean, I'm vegan, so.
Well, you know what? I think fish do have feelings, and our line of angry fish t-shirts will tell you so.
Very true.
Available at tpublic.com. Just go to our Invasion of the Remake Wix site, and you can click that store tab to get yours now.
Absolutely.
Nice.
Now,
you're welcome. We got there organically. It was awesome.
Yes, we did. One aspect that I thought was inspired in the remake is casting Seth Rogen as Pumbaa. What a great casting choice.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, talk about a role Seth was born to play. There are times where I just like, oh, Seth Rogen. And other times where it's like, like this time. Like, oh yeah, he's perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, poor Pharrell Williams probably wanted to shove a hot poker into his head every time he tried to get that poor bastard to sing. But
yeah.
But as a Pumbaa, yeah. Seth Rogen definitely makes a good warthog.
I was saying to Leah while we were watching it that his lack of ability to sing when he is singing also kind of works for his character.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Just about to say that. Completely agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a great, really, really great Pumbaa. I feel like there's a lot of Disney movies with their remakes where I feel like they're just treading the same ground and they don't really have anything new to offer. And strangely, The Lion King gets a lot of flack for that exact reason. Mm-hmm. However, I thought that it did have a lot of really good casting choices in terms of the actors who were in it who did bring something new to the roles that they were doing. And I feel like, oddly enough, this is one of my favorite Disney remakes, and weirdly for me does stand a bit more on its own than some of the other ones that they've attempted.
I'm not sure. Like, casting choices were actually pretty good. I don't agree with the commentary of saying it's a heartless remake. It's going to have a different soul to it because it is just different. And when you're trying to go with a little more realistic and taking away a lot of the stage flair that the animation have, it's going to feel a little different and not as funny or even fun in some cases. But I think it's very strong. I don't think it offers a lot in the way of new. Mm-hmm. Almost nothing in the way of new, but it does feel a little different because of the performances the actors are bringing to those roles. So there's a little bit of a flavor change because of it, but I don't think it's different enough.
Yeah.
Like where the Jungle Book, I felt like changed enough to be a little different. This one doesn't change enough to, I think, fall into that category. It's a little closer to like being almost psycho level close.
I think so. Yeah, I'm with you on that. When you're talking about like how it's got that heartless feeling, I think what people were getting at but don't quite know how to express is in the original one, like it's very cartoonish, but if you're going to go realistic with the animation and the actors are going to go realistic with it, it is going to show up as darker and grimmer because that is the actual story. The actual story itself is really grim when you look at the original and this one. Just like taking a look at all the beats, it's grim and sad and unpleasant, but when you add realism it becomes it just becomes more real. That grimness is there,
and you can't really if you started to play around with the kind of imagery that they did in the original one, like with the plants changing colors or like the animal tower, like it just wouldn't feel right in the world that they are presenting as, you know, a more nature documentary approach.
There's one change they made that I didn't really like in the remake that I thought was not as good. In the original, when Timon and Pumbaa come across Simba, they're playing, what was it? It's vulture bowling or something like that. They're having fun with it. But Simba doesn't, he's unconscious and he doesn't come to until they take him somewhere safe. Whereas in the remake, I mean, he's already collapsed, but in partway through the scene, he gets up to keep going. And I'm like, no, you were basically vulture meat. So it didn't feel right to me.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know, for a character that has given up, the perseverance of giving up for that character didn't make a lot of sense. So you're just going to continue walking and being depressed when you were quite happy to lay down and die.
Exactly. I need to keep giving up.
Yeah. The perseverance of you giving up is, I don't know. It's come full circle is what it's got done.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know if that worked that well. There was one it was a really brief imagery when Rafiki was leading Simba to that pond where he could see the reflection of his father within himself. And it held on in the moment when he's in the brush and I'm like, oh, crown of thorns, fuck you with the Jesus imagery.
Right.
I'm like, oh, that's a cool shot. And then I realized what it was. I'm like, that's not so cool. I'm not digging that. That's a little heavy handed in my eyes.
With also, you know, he's like, oh, you're the one true king. And I was just getting Aslan vibes a little bit.
That's funny because I wasn't done with hyper-realistic lions, so I watched Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe last night.
Nice. who's Aslan in that one? Is it Liam Neeson?
It was Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that for me, probably with the remake, I see the whole thing basically as an excuse to give a technical showcase of what's possible with animation and movie making technology. And I feel like for me, it exists more as, you know, this is what we can do now than a movie in its own right. But I also kind of liked it for that reason, is you don't really get a lot of opportunities for people to just show off with technicality. And it is very, very impressive on a technical level.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about more of that technical achievement right after we run the trailer for the 2019 Lion King.
Life's not fair, is it, my little friend? While some are born to feast, others spend their lives in the dark. Begging for scraps. Everything you see exists together in a delicate balance. While others search for what they can take, a true king searches for what he can give. Run away, Simba. And never return. Take your place in the circle of life.
And the 2019 Lion King was a screenplay by Jeff Nathanson. By all accounts, this script probably should have been terrible, but he had good source material because he wrote Speed 2, Cruise Control, Rush Hour 2 and 3, and the actual excellent Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, he has like nice. Two good movies in his resume. Like also he did Terminal, but everything else is like...
Yeah, there's a lot of ugh. Directed by Jon Favreau, who we recently talked about in episode 268, The Jungle Book, just a few short months ago, and I guess we didn't get the animals out of us yet, so
no.
We're doing Lion King now, starring the voices of Donald Glover as Simba, who you can catch in another... Before I get into the rest of the cast here, this is... pretty much anybody who's been in a Star Wars or Marvel movie show. Now, yeah. Donald Glover played Simba, who was in Solo, a Star Wars story. Beyonce, who did wind up doing the Lion King-inspired Disney Plus special, and I want to say was it The King in Black or something like that on there? You'll find it. Just Google Beyonce, but it was very much a Black story inspired by the Lion King, which...
Nice.
It was kind of cool. And maybe that was part of her deal to appear in this, because she would have been a big get for this. Seth Rogen as Pumbaa, who you can catch in This Is the End, and I don't think's been in a Disney or Star Wars anything, or Marvel anything.
No.
Day's still young, though. Chiwetel...
He wasn't that comic book, the Green Hornet, though.
Yeah, we don't talk about that. Chiwetel Ejiofor was Scar, and he was in Doctor Strange, and I think gave a great performance as Scar here. I really liked it, and he has a great resonance to his voice, and I think out of anybody on here, I think was on par with what Jeremy Irons did, but still made that role his own. I think he did a great job in this. John Oliver, more famous for Last Week Tonight, and being a television presenter than an actor, I think did a pretty damn good job as Zazu. They kind of lean into his kind of comedic newscaster in the role more so. It was something that was already present in Zazu, but they really leaned into it in this one.
Yes.
James Earl Jones returns as Mufasa, and I already told you what episodes to refer back to on that one. John Canny was Rafiki. He was in the Black Panther. Alfre Woodward was Sarabi, and you can see her in the Apple Plus TV show C. Also recently was a prominent role in Luke Cage over on Netflix.
Penny, and a thousand other things. She's the girl in That Thing That One Time.
Yeah, she really is that girl you saw in That Thing That One Time. Penny Johnson Gerald was Serafina, and you probably recognized her. You might not recognize her voice, but if you saw her, you recognize her. You'd be like, hey, she was the wife of the president in 24. And she's also got a prominent role on The Orville. Keegan-Michael Key, he plays Kamari, one of the hyenas, and you can check him out, if you're willing to stomach it, the very terrible The Predator. but he was good in it. He was one of the shining moments of shining actors within a terrible movie.
You can't forget Key and Peele, which is just like one of the best sketch shows of the past 20 years.
So good.
Yes. Eric Andre was Azizi. I recognize his voice right away. He was another of the hyenas, and he plays the little black demon in Disenchantment. He's the voice of that. So,
and the anti-comedy talk show, Eric Andre Show.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Oh, and Comedy Bang Bang.
Oh, there you go. You guys know more about him than I do.
He's also in a really good show called Man Seeking Woman, which is worth checking out with J.B. Rochelle, just as a shout-out. That show is very underrated, so...
Florence Kasumba was Shenzi, the lead hyena. She's also in Black Panther. Billy Eichner was Timon, and you can catch him in American Horror Story. J.D. McCrary was young Simba, and you can catch him in a show called The Pains. Shahadi Wright Joseph was young Nala, and she was in the Jordan Peele movie Us.
Amy, she also was reprising her role. She played young Nala in Broadway for The Lion King.
Oh, that's right. Oh. Yep. Amy Sedaris was Guinea Fowl, and you can catch Amy on BoJack Horseman. Well, I guess you can't anymore. It's over, but it still exists on Netflix. And Chance the Rapper was the Bush Baby.
Yes.
Phil Lamar was Impala, another famous animation voice actor. We may have mentioned him before, but his resume is so long. I didn't even get past 2010. That's how many goddamn credits he's got. Just definitely the most famous voice actor in this cast. And Jay Lee was another hyena, and he was also another actor from The Orville. Now, yeah, let's get back to the technical achievements of this movie, because they're vast. It does feel like them pushing technology forward. And as much as the original one did as well, what people don't realize when they watch it, we talk about how much wonderful hand-drawn 2D animation in there, but there is quite a bit of CG animation in there when the charging of the wildebeests, the stampede scene, that was all computer generated, and then they had to create that from scratch and create new technology to make that stampede happen. It took 3 years to make that scene happen in the original film. So definitely an achievement there as well. Now, what I kind of want to see is, now that we have this technology, we've done The Jungle Book, we've done The Lion King, can Disney do something original with it rather than rehash their old stuff?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they are planning a kind of a prequel sequel with this, because The Lion King remake did so well. They're talking about doing a story with Mufasa that's kind of his origin story as well as what happens after his death.
Oh, they need to do 1.5 with Timon and Pumbaa.
Yeah, I think that they were saying that it was going to be like Godfather 2.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't know. Less horse head.
One thing, I know that it would be obviously preferable if they did something original. I would love to see them take another crack, even in a completely different way, at doing a movie like Dinosaur, where the original trailer that came out for Dinosaur was just this amazing...
Yeah,
CG of dinosaurs and living their life and fighting, and then that's not what the movie was at all. But they have this amazing technology. Make some cool movies about animals that don't exist anymore.
Yeah. Dinosaur wound up being a big disappointment in the long run because, yeah, you're right. The trailer sold us a different movie and didn't wind up going the way we wanted it to.
Yeah, give us the photorealistic version of Tarkovsky's Primal. That would be great.
I'm not sure if a whole lot of people are asking for that, but sure, why not?
I want to Land Before Time. I think that would be good if we're doing dinosaurs.
Well, yeah. That one would be a good one, to, I think, to go back to and try this with, but it's not Disney. So that's one.
I know.
And the animation studio, I think, is long shut down that does that. I don't even know if who released that. Who's the studio that actually owns that? But I bet you they've been long out of the animation game for quite some time.
Yeah, if they get the rights, they can do it.
It's a Don Bluth movie.
Yeah, it was Don Bluth, but I'm like, who the studio that released the movie would probably have the
rights. It was Universal, apparently.
Okay, yeah, Universal, yeah. If they're willing to throw up the dough, that would be probably a good moneymaker for them.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they did so much with that property after. I mean, there were at least three theatricals before the wagon train of direct-to-video ones that they did. I mean, they got past 10.
Yeah.
They could make it the children's branch of Fast and the Furious. You know, like there's just all of those. And then the Trish, Blend Before Time.
That exists. I told you there's a spinoff animated series on Netflix. And it's quite good.
Oh, no. But I mean, like, the family-friendly dinosaur thing is going to be the kids' Fast and the Furious. And the adults are just going to have Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, but there is a kids' Fast and the Furious. That's what I'm telling you. It exists. It's quite good.
And I mean, wouldn't that be, if you're going to have a comparison, wouldn't that just be the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Oh. Well, and now that I think of it, they're dinosaurs and they're not moving very fast. So... It's the Jurassic and the Furious.
Well, there's now a new Netflix Jurassic Park series as well that's got some good action in it as well.
Nice.
But yeah, it's all CG, but not that hyper realistic CG. I mean, that's expensive CG. let's not mix words. I'm like, when you get that kind of level of CG enhancement and to make it look that natural, I guess they did have some problems with the kittens during the stampede. But they would use objects to obscure some of the herky-jerkiness that might have come up. So I didn't notice it. But
Me neither.
But yeah, they found ways around it where it didn't look quite natural. But I'm not sure what other challenges they faced with it. But wow, that's something.
They Michael Bayed it.
Now, it doesn't come cheap. The original movie didn't come cheap either. It was $45 million to do that animation in 1994. Granted, that voice cast probably wasn't cheap either. It would go on to make $422 million domestically and over $1 billion worldwide, and another $500 million in various video releases. So huge moneymaker. And this live action remake had a budget of $260 million.
Whoa.
I'm wondering how much of that went to Beyonce, but goddamn, that's huge. Its opening weekend was $191 million, almost $192, went on to gross $543 million in domestic ticket sales with $1.6 billion worldwide. So very profitable, but when you go, 1994 money, $45 million to...
Yeah.
Like $1.5 billion with VHS and DVD and Blu-ray, as opposed to the $1.6 now, the original made more money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and think about how much went into the marketing of, well, both those movies, really, but especially now, despite the fact it made $1.6 billion, it probably on paper made a heck of a lot less money than the original.
Yeah,
no, that's actually really interesting, because a huge part of Disney's original model of making money on films was home video release. But now that's all like leveraged into Disney Plus, and that's much harder to quantify.
Yeah, but I remember when you're talking about like the marketing for this, I remember like Lion King cups that you could get. And I remember the tiny little Rafiki action figures you could get. Like, there's so much to be had with The Lion King. It's the one I remember very vividly.
A lot of McDonald's crossover.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
You know, it just came to mind when you were talking about some of the technical stuff. You're absolutely right in that the original movie, it was a technical achievement as well. And I feel like Disney used to be known with their animated movies for pushing the medium as far as it could go. And every movie bringing you things that you've never seen before in that medium. And I feel like this movie kind of refreshingly did that again for Disney, where it feels like they're on the forefront of something again versus just making a movie with the fancy technology
now
everyone is using.
Well, I mean, I'd argue to say that maybe they already hit that with the Jungle Book. Jungle Book looked that good already. I mean, Jon Favreau was intending to shoot them back to back at the time.
Yeah. I do think Lion King looks much better than Jungle Book. Like, Jungle Book looked great, but Lion King was another level, I feel.
I think more time with the Lion King to give more attention to it, because it was the bigger moneymaker of the two. Jungle Book being an older property might not have resonated with the younger crowd as much as the Lion King. And with 90s revivals, hot as it is right now, doing your 90s properties is your best bet, really.
And everybody who worked on Jungle Book, presumably, were also working on Lion King. So you also have the benefit of a ton of people who are now very well practiced in doing what they're doing, and then basically honing their craft even more with the Lion King.
Well, I found, at least when you talk technical achievement, I found the Jungle Book slightly more impressive because you had to immerse a live human in it, whereas in this one, you didn't really have to. It's easier to swipe over some of those areas because you're CGIing it.
Yeah, you might be right there, because where you have to utilize, well, I don't know. Yeah, you're utilizing the technology in a real world setting, or at least a stage setting where you can put your green screens up, whereas 100% of that can be done in a computer. Like I said, there's that one shot he snuck in. It was just pure hubris to see if anybody will notice.
It's a sunrise.
Yeah, that's a lot of expense for no reason. But I guess that probably saved him much in the long run to not have to CGI that sunrise. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that shows you how good it looks, is because you don't notice. I thought they got a little overindulgent with the fur getting back to Rafiki and, you know, eaten by the shadow and the dung beetle. I'm like, oh boy, this fur is taking a long time to get back to Rafiki.
Yeah, and Leah was saying,
pretty boring.
She's like, I know why this movie is longer than the original one. It's because they dedicate a half an hour to the fur getting back to Rafiki.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I think it was also meant to show the circle of life in a more literal way than they did in the animation. Yeah. Like, oh no, it got eaten up and shat out and still made it back.
Yep. Oh, speaking of like kind of slow things, in both movies, every time I see that last lone, is it wildebeest or water buffalo? Just running through, and then Simba sees his dad. I'm like, that poor bastard, like that last guy, like he should be dead by now if he can't keep up with the herd. Like, what's wrong with him?
The fact they kept it shows you how much of the original movies become so iconic that Favreau felt like he couldn't deviate too much from that imagery. And it's ever pervasive in this movie. It's everywhere. Like, constantly, like, yep, that looks the same. Just fancier, but it's the same scene.
I was reading that before he started working on Lion King, and before he did any preparation, the very first thing that he did was, from the top of his head, just from his memory, try to think of as many scenes from the original Lion King as he could remember, and writing them down. And in the order that he remembered them, he was saying those were the most important iconic shots of the movie, the ones he could remember from the top of his head, and the ones that he felt that he had to include.
He's not wrong. They are iconic. The imagery in there was so masterfully done in the original that it does stick with you, even if you only ever saw it once. Just the opening shot, Rafiki holding up Simba, everybody knows that shot.
How many people did that to their cats? Tons, the time.
It was parodied a lot, too, and a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Name one.
It was parodied at the end of Brendan Fraser's George of the Jungle. It was parodied a few times in The Animaniacs. It was parodied a lot, actually, in animated TV shows, especially comedy ones in the 90s.
Yeah.
Especially common were people holding up something over the ledge and them having that shot and then the person dropping what they're holding.
Mm-hmm. There was some other controversy we've talked about a little bit during this episode, that it was plagiarized from the very famous Japanese character of Kimba, the white lion, Kimba Simba. The Disney claims that, and a lot of people who worked on the original film, a lot of them weren't even aware, although Matthew Broderick thought he was working on a remake of Kimba the White Lion when he was recording his lines. I don't know. There's some argument there. The Japanese company never really sued over it. They didn't see the similarities. I mean, kittens look like kittens. A young lion cub's going to look like another lion cub, right? They're going to be a
And the uncle usurping the throne has been in plays other than Macbeth. Like, yeah. It's been around.
Yeah, Hamlet. But yes, yeah, that it's been around. It's been it's a fairly well-used story. So yeah, I think that was a kind of a frivolous thing where people were pointing it out. I mean, I get it. People were protective of, I think it was Osamu Tezuka, if I'm saying that name right.
Yeah, Osamu Tezuka,
very prominent animator out in Japan. I mean, he created Astro Boy. He created a style out there that is
Tezuka is often referred to as the Godfather. Japan's. And he's referred to as Japan's Walt Disney. He was a huge deal, very influential. And Kimba the White Lion was the first ever anime in color. It was a super huge manga, and it was also one of the first anime that ported over to North America. So culturally, it was very big before Lion King, which I think is where a lot of the accusations come from, is like, here's a major work that isn't just a thing that no one's heard of. It was fairly significant that bears a lot of similarity.
Yeah.
So what was your childhood experience with The Lion King? I'm assuming everybody had seen this at least once. Like, was it a favorite of yours? Wasn't it? We already know how I felt about it. But
like, I grew up watching The Lion King. It was at my parents. So when I was growing up, got a lot of stuff secondhand. But one of the few things that my parents would actually splurge on is my mom is a really big Disney fan. So we did get a lot of the video releases of Disney movies as they were coming out. So I had a lot of Disney growing up, and Lion King was something I did like a lot. The music, as we've talked about, is really incredible. So I think the soundtrack helped a lot with that. I was actually a really big fan of the Timon and Pumbaa TV show.
Nice.
It was really good. A lot of the 90s Disney animated TV shows are actually very strong, and a lot of them had a lot of the same voice talents and a lot of the similar people making them.
I might check it out now that I see that they're on Disney Plus, because that one completely passed me by. But when they did animated series based on those, oftentimes, even though the animation wasn't quite as good as the feature, the show itself was actually better than the features. I would say the Tarzan animated series,
Hercules
was far better as a series than it was as a feature.
Not the original one, though. That one was crazy with Toot.
No, the animated series definitely was better than the original Hercules film.
The animated series is incredible.
Yeah.
No, but are you talking like Disney Hercules animated series? Or I'm talking the 1980s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, with the ring.
Charlene Prickett.
Oh, everything's better than that.
It was called, I think it was called Young Hercules, and it was mostly about Hercules as a teenager.
Yes.
Yeah, but they got to pull a lot from pop culture and just kind of weave it into Greek mythology. So they had my favorite episode where I think it was Odysseus, and they treated him like Batman.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
You know, I was going to bring this up earlier, but I feel like in a lot of ways, the 1990s was really the peak of 2D animation, even with like DC Comics animated movies. At one point were kind of like some of the best animation that was happening and some of the best stuff that was being made straight to video. And now a lot of the stuff coming out is very static and stilted. And in a lot of ways, animation as a whole has regressed since the 90s.
Yeah.
The 90s is when the really good technology had been perfected and a lot of people were becoming proficient at it.
Well, I think part of it now is if you're doing animation, like before it was Saturday morning cartoons and that was driving toy sales and they were willing to put money into it. And now like it was a time consuming process, and like they could just do it cheaper as flash animation, which didn't look as good, or something really flat and less stylized. And they just got lazier and lazier at it. But more so to the point, Saturday morning cartoons went away. There were laws put in place where they couldn't market to kids through animation anymore, so they had to tell better stories. Yeah. But at the same time, that means they're making less money. So they're less goes back into them again. I can't say why it phased out when you had this huge high in the 90s, late 80s and 90s, this new golden age of Walt Disney. And after a couple of failures, they stopped doing it. Like,
yeah,
you had failures in the past before. I mean, maybe it was because there was no other technology to fall back on. But I'm sure at some point they had talked about in the early 80s, maybe closing the animation department at Disney because there was failures. That's just economics. But they always carried forward and done another one. I mean, we had the brief test with Princess and the Frog going back to that style, which I think they did beautifully. Unfortunately, it didn't attract people to it. And then they gave up again.
Yeah.
And it's baffling. One of those things where, but they had a huge hit with Lilo and Stitch, which wasn't even supposed to be theatrical.
Yeah. Well, what we've got here is they're operating now on a business model where any failure is bad and we got to quit that. Like, they don't expect failure. And it's so surprising when it happens. Like, that to me is just a product of kind of the times that sort of came before it, is you've got just a bunch of people who are like, all failure is bad. Not really. I mean, you can get some wonderful cult classics out of it, but you don't think of it that way. But they're like, all failure is bad. We must stop all failure. Mm-hmm. That's not the way to live your life. And they've really just absorbed that.
I'd say the Don Bluth classics, all of them are pretty memorable. They're not quite as Disney memorable, but everybody knows them. All Dogs Go to Heaven and the Fievel movies and Titan A.E. was beautifully done. Didn't attract the right audience for them and ultimately killed another studio for animation. And next thing you know, all of Hollywood's going, oh, this kind of animation doesn't work anymore. And you're not doing it anymore. But it did. It worked before. And I think a lot of it came down to bad marketing more than anything else. It wasn't because they were bad. I mean, especially in the case of non-Disneys, at least Disney, they would have like an all-star voice cast, which I don't think draws anything to animation. Kids don't give a fuck who the voices are. But, and you're spending too much money on it. But Disney at least didn't market those voices to the kids as much as some of the competitors would. And we've done some of those movies, but a lot of the times you watch those ads and they're going, Brad Pitt as, or whoever as, and they put the star over the product. And you don't know anything about the product going in, and then they wonder why it fails, because like nobody gives a shit that Brad Pitt was the voice of this character.
Kids want to know what excitement is going to happen. They want to know what adventure they're going on. They don't give a shit who's talking.
And it's a huge detriment to like the voice acting community as well, where as soon as you start casting a lot more celebrities in these roles, that's less roles for very talented voice actors who, I mean, they're voice actors for a reason. They have an ability to act with their voice in ways that just like a Hollywood actor just walking into a studio for the first time might not actually have. There are some great actors who are also voice actors, but sometimes it's just that actor talking like they normally talk. And with a voice actor, a really good one, you know, they're prolific and they can bring a lot to the role. And yeah, this focus on big actors in animation is a little bit a detriment to, you know, is it the money's being funneled into the wrong column.
Well, and some of them, at least with like the professional voice actors, they know it's just them. And sometimes with like the big name actors, if they have no one to go up against, they don't know what they need to do. Like they sometimes can't get into the right space for it.
And sometimes too with animation, like with like a really good voice actor, like Phil Lamar, who we were talking about earlier, he can voice a character and what you're watching is that character. But with some celebrity voices, as great as, you know, Robin Williams is as the genie, you watch that and you go, oh, that's Robin Williams as the genie.
Yeah. And his face, and they sort of take the voice actor and then make the character look like them as opposed to the other way around, which, you know, I think is reversed. It's it should be the character. And then you have so much more to go with that.
Yeah. And while, you know, Robin Williams is very famous for playing the genie, I'd argue Castanella did a better job of being the genie, and certainly did it way more often when he did that character in the sequel movies and the television series.
Yeah.
Well, and you talk about how that they don't get what the kids want. I mean, there's some of the stuff, some of the jokes of the genie in Aladdin where you're like, yeah, that's going to go over a kid's head. Sure, it's a great little treat for the adult, but if you put too much of that in, kid's going to check out.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I think Aladdin was an example of that, though. I mean, it was very well balanced for everybody, and Disney's very good at that. We'll cover that in more detail down the road, because there's another live action to that one, too. So we'll get there. We have a wagon train of these yet to go. We'll try to keep them spread out, but Disney keeps making them. We still have Dumbo, Lady and the Tramp.
Pete and the Dragon?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, we did Pete's Dragon.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we did Pete's Dragon.
That was slightly before I came on board.
Aladdin, and there's still plenty of other Disneys that don't fall into this near realistic animated style, but we've got like Freaky Friday.
Cinderella.
Yeah.
We've got a few. We've got quite a few left to go, and the longer we wait, the more there will be of these things.
Yeah, they're just going to keep coming.
Yeah, when you see the list of stuff they want to do like this, it's literally their entire library.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any truth to this, but I've heard some people speculate that the reason that Disney's doing this is because they basically would reintroduce films that they made into the culture every certain number of years. And they used to do that by vaulting movies where they'd say, buy it now before it goes in the vault, and you won't be able to get it again for 10 more years. And because of streaming and stuff, though, you can't really do that to the same level. So they're
I argue that you can, but having the vaults open is a big boon for Disney Plus. It's what part of the draw to Disney Plus is. But if they would have just kept like this portion of the vault, vault it, and then do another one, I'd argue that would have more longevity for Disney Plus in continuing the service rather than having it all available all at once.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree, actually. But I feel like today's modern consumer, they just want as wide variety of stuff at their fingertips as possible. And if they can't get it from the person who makes it, they'll find other possibly illicit means of getting it. But this way, if they are remaking their old properties and reintroducing these properties into the culture again through remakes, they're kind of like finding an additional way to dip their hands back into those honeypots again.
Yeah, you're probably right about that as well.
Which is interesting. I do feel like a lot of it does feel pretty unnecessary, like this Cruella movie coming out, like Cruella de Vil prequel, presumably to make her seem sympathetic as a puppy killer. But
see, and I prefer that sort of idea where, I mean, yeah, it is Cruella, but I'm not getting a rehash of something I've already seen.
Yeah, I think Cruella, this is their attempt to do the same thing they did with Maleficent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, give me something new.
They've had some good luck doing that with their villainesses to the point where they're actually marketing the Disney villainesses as their own line. So, and we see the pop up when they were doing Once Upon a Time, which I think is where the experiment was going on. And Maleficent has proved to be popular, but the problem is you take your villain and then you make them sympathetic and they're no longer a villain anymore, and then you've run out of villains because all your villains have become heroes.
Yeah, well, and there's some so heroes.
It's a tough line to do.
Like Cruella and Jafar, like these are all characters that are great as villains and they don't need to be secretly sympathetic.
I don't know. I sort of somewhat disagree with some of it because it's sort of, I enjoy watching a villain where there's at least some shades to them. And I kind of think it's important to have children sort of exposed to sort of shades of gray in the human experience as opposed to like black and white.
Oh yeah,
stuff.
No, I don't disagree with
then
you there.
They become black and white as human, like as grownups, which is, I think, part of the problem that we're dealing with right now.
That said, though, to tie back into Lion King, with Scar's musical number in the original movie, they referenced a lot of Nazi imagery to hone in on Scar as a bad guy, and we're going to be evocative of Nazis during this musical number. And that was something that they wanted to originally take out entirely in the remake.
Yeah,
people didn't like that, so they said we'll include a shorter version, but we won't allude to the Nazis at all. But
Around at the time. People could go outside and find Nazis, so it was just too frightening for children.
What, unlike now?
Well,
that's why I'm saying children now could go outside and find Nazis, so that's why the remake didn't have it.
But I feel
the original, they were a little harder to find. You had to go to Argentina.
No, I think that it's actually the opposite. I feel like it's more important to be like, there are some people who are terrible and are bad, and there are Nazis, and Nazis used to be a shorthand for villain for a long time. And removing that, I feel like, adds to the confusion.
Oh, I'm not against not telling kids about Nazis, but I think it's really defaming the good name of hyenas. And that's not something we want to do. Oh. I mean, hyenas are nowhere near as bad as Nazis. They're just not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to argue with you there, but I definitely think that there's some levels where you can't make every villain sympathetic, and you can't shy away from showing villains that are evil, that do.
Oh, yeah. But
things.
I'm just saying, if you're going to make any Nazi imagery, just make them human, because that's the worst thing. And humans are crap. So do that. Show kids that we're crap.
Leave the Nazis to Indiana Jones. But and I don't have a problem with black and white type of villains. I mean, I'm all for sympathetic villains. It just gives you more layers to work with. And I think that works better when you're doing a hyper-realistic thing and twisting that. And I think they did it fairly successfully here with Lion King. But when you're talking to kids, you kind of want to just keep it simple. That's the bad guy. That's the good guy. And that is a formula that works. And I don't think that changes children's ideology. We all grew up with black and white villain cartoons and we're fine. So don't give me that bullshit. But
we are, but there's a lot of people who aren't. Trust me. We're a very unique set of people. There's other assholes out here who are the same age as us.
But
who grew up with
to point the fingers at cartoons pisses me off. So I don't think that is the cause for people. I think that it's an education problem and has nothing to do with cartoons.
Yeah, I mean, video games never made anyone violent. Dungeons and Dragons didn't make people Satan worshippers.
I'm guessing it's because people just left it all to everything else. They didn't want to talk to their children.
And I hate when you can't just point your fingers and blame something that causes something else. And no,
But it's the home leaving them with stuff that they aren't given the tools to understand.
I just realized, though,
we were talking about black and white villains, and Cruella de Vil is literally black and white, like all over.
Well, there's that. Yeah. I'll be interested to see how they handle her. And a younger, like seeing a sympathetic character that has had the world crush her to the point where she's become cold and cruel to it, that's an interesting story. As long as we see that build up to where she gets, can still have that black and white villain from 101 Dalmatians, but she probably didn't start out that way. And to see what that's going to look like could be a fascinating story. And on paper, and even in my head, I'm like, that's a pretty good story. We'll find out.
I hope that Disney's courageous enough to make a movie where it ends with the person being like wholly evil. I mean, with Maleficent, they're kind of like, well, she's actually a victim and you don't know her side of the story. But with Cruella, it is a much more interesting story to say, you know, here's how this person becomes absolutely unredeemably evil.
It would be interesting to watch sort of that descent and other choices and how you might just end up being there because you blame the outside. And it's like, it's a set of circumstances that you can see people going through. And then you're like, oh, that's how they got there. And well, they're there now. There's very little I can do right now.
Disney's done that. They did that with Maleficent. We've seen that same road happen with Anakin Skywalker to Darth Vader. Yeah. And more recently, the really dark The Joker movie. So these stories are being told and being told well. I don't know if they told it well in Star Wars, but, you know, they're being told and they are certainly trying. And as we see the downfall of these characters who may have even started out pretty good, and as their world crumbles around them, whether it's their parenthood or whatever. So it'll be interesting to see what Cruella is. I've not looked up what the story beats are. So we can only make assumptions as to what they're going to do there.
Just as a personal thing, I was just wondering if maybe you think about this, Jay, or even you to an extent, Jeff, where is it sometimes you kind of look at your life, you're thinking, if I'd made like several different decisions, like how different would I be? Would I be the same person? Would I become crueler? Like, I just wonder sometimes.
I feel like for me, there's a very, very easily I can look at my life and see how I could potentially have become like an ultra right wing Christian person who, just because like I grew up in a very religious household, but I mean, it didn't work out that way. Mm-hmm. I would like to think I have a pretty open mind about a lot of stuff, but I could definitely see how if things had went differently, that wouldn't have been the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I do look at my past, and most of the times I think I made the right choices, minor things I wouldn't mind changing where I maybe made the wrong choice, but ultimately the wrong choices and the right choices kind of made me the person I am today. There are some stuff I look back on, I'm like, damn, I might have had more fun, but at the end of the day, I might have been a shittier person for it. So,
spending all this time inside this past year, these thought experiments occur to me, and I'm sometimes curious if other people are doing the same things.
I don't know. Who knows? Any last thoughts here about The Lion King before we head off into the sunset?
Actually, a little bit on the technical side, just because I find it very fascinating. The way that they were making the movie for the remake is they built kind of the world that they made off of a video game engine as their basis, and they approached a lot of the cinematography using VR technology, where they would basically build a VR world, and then they basically have a camera that they're shooting stuff within a VR setting. And that's becoming more and more common. But they really utilized it really interestingly in this movie.
Yeah, what a fascinating way to do that, where you can pick your locations in real time on this VR headset. And, okay, this is where I'm going to manipulate my shot and pull the camera this way. And such a strange way to do it. But that's the future of filmmaking, where you're literally manipulating the canvas in real time. And I think that technology was probably created for Avatar initially, where they had the little handheld and you could see the actors, what they would look like in real time with a CG overlay. It wouldn't be hyper detailed, but it would be enough for you to get a sense of what this is going to look like.
And it's like this really interesting hybrid of live action filmmaking technique with this new technology we're able to utilize in animation. Very fascinating.
Yeah. You're setting up a shot, but the shot doesn't exist. Really?
Like you still choose your camera angles and choose your, zooming in, zooming out.
Yeah, the fundamentals are the same, but it's all, I'm sure they storyboarded it all ahead of time, but if it all exists, you're like, oh, let's tweak it, pull it up, camera up here a little bit, and oh, that's crazy. I mean, the fundamentals are the same, but at the same time, it's so different because you're manipulating it right there on the fly.
That's kind of why it's like an animated movie, but it's also not. It is kind of this weird hybrid. Yeah.
You were stuck in real time committing to what you were doing on paper. So you couldn't, once you had it, you couldn't change it. It was meticulous when it came to 2D animation. Now you can manipulate things. I think once they got like the animals and stuff rendered, you're pretty committed. But when you're setting up your shots and just the world without the characters, and you can rough them in like that and move things around, that's probably quite freeing.
Yeah, kind of wild. And I was gonna say too, it is really good CG on that remake, very good. I mean, I've seen some movies that even just recently there's been like crap CG on it. It seemed like there was, between about 2007 to about 2018, there was like a low point where CG just, I don't know, it looked crap. People couldn't figure it out. Whereas this one, like the textures of the fur, you can see, you can like sense it. And I thought that was like really, really well done.
Yeah, to be able to do CG at this level to fool our eye, it's weird. Like Star Wars can't seem to make a human look right. Tron to Princess Leia and Grand Moff Tarkin, they all look awkward and weird to me, and even Luke more recently in Mandalorian. People aren't looking right, but man, animals, creatures, they're getting so good that when you can't tell the difference and see that obvious CG sheen to it, that's something else entirely. And clearly this is an expensive process to get to that kind of level, but we're at a point now like with Lion King, you really can't tell the difference unless you're looking for the character's sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's no balls. Okay.
No.
I feel like ultimately the remake, I feel like it justifies itself in the, like, as a technical marvel, and also a lot of the voice performances are very strong. And the music, they did very well. The music is really good. Donald Glover and Beyonce's Can You Feel the Love Tonight is a great rendition of that song. So the remake actually does have a lot to offer.
Well, let's face it. They had a really strong source material to work from, regardless of whether it's a childhood favorite or not, in my case. But I won't take the achievement of either one of them away from them. These were great films. Clearly, the ones who love the original animated film don't like the remake as much. IMDb rates the original as an 8.5 out of 10, where the remake is a 6.9 out of 10. Audiences and critics on Rotten Tomatoes were tied on the original at 93%.
Wow.
Super high. And somewhat more unforgiving with the remake, where critics only 52% on critics score. And a much more healthy 88% with the audience score.
Yeah. But I think it's a shame. It's an achievement. Even though it treads a lot of the same ground, I'd say it's an achievement.
Yeah,
there's a lot there for the filmmakers to be proud of, and it's a shame that it doesn't resonate with critics. And sometimes it takes time. Sometimes films, we've covered several on the show already, where time will give it the kudos it actually deserves, and it's not always appreciated for how good it is in its moment. And maybe Lion King the remake is one of them, but at the same time, they did falter by not changing it enough. I think that was part of the problem, where everybody fondly loves the original, and here they see this hyper realistic version of the same thing. And there might be the disappointment, because there's too much familiarity already, and it's going to be hard to change that memory in your brain.
We're not enough Owima ways away from giving it.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle.
It's the full circle of life.
We came back and we finally got the music cue.
The music cue. I've had the music going through my head all day. It's a great, great soundtrack.
Much of that. I'm trying to shake it. It's been 2 days. I've been basically watching The Lion King, from The Lion King to the remake one, and Lion King 1 1/2. And I'm Lion Kinged out. I need to wipe that music from my brain. It's become an evasive earworm that is destroying my soul. So I don't know. We're going to do something next week that's going to be a different departure, and hopefully no earworms will be in it. Make sure you tell your friends and family about the show, where to find it, and follow us on our social media at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com. If you want to send us your suggestions, your corrections, and your comments or fan challenges, we still have a few more to get to this year, but we're always willing to hear more. It's going to take us a while to get to a fan challenge if we approve it. So please be patient if we've talked to you about a fan challenge and you haven't seen it yet. We have not forgotten about you. It is on a list, and we'll get there. We have our own things we want to do. So we're going to do those too, and try to fit in the fan challenges when we can. We got something special coming up in April. No, we're not bringing back the monkeys this year, but we do have another theme month happening in April. We're only a few weeks away from Alien Invasion April. Ooh, Alien Invasion April. So lots of ways we can go with that, and it's going to be fun. Lots of science fiction and stuff going to be hitting your ear holes and ear balls in April.
Yes. Whatever alien ear things you have, it'll hit those.
Yeah, don't forget to hit our store. You can check out our Wix site, invasiontheremake.wixsite.com. I don't know. Sam's always got it right, and I don't have to remember it. invasiontheremake.wixsite.com. Sure, maybe it's the other way around. Maybe it's Wix site dot invasion remake. I don't know. Just search Invasion of the Remake Wix. You'll find it.
Yeah.
But in there, there's a store. There's a store tab. And you hit that button. There's lots of cool designs. We talked about the Angry Fish line, but there's also a wonderful poster line that Jeff's put together. Mm. There's the skull face masks with the microphone. Yes. That are very cool as well. And you can get them as pictures, posters, mugs, magnet stickers, all sorts of cool stuff, and of course t-shirts and PPE masks. So hit up our Wix sites. Every dollar generated over there goes back into the production of the show. So by buying a t-shirt for your back, most of it's going to T Public, but the rest of it will go support us and help pay for hosting and that sort of thing. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, next week we're going to remake something. Until then, I've been Jason.
I continue to be Trish.
And I always return as Jeff Omega.
And we are out of here.
Well, that's it. The big wrap up. The happy ending. The grand finale.
It's over already?
Well, Pumba, that's the thing about endings. They come at the end.
Oh, can we watch it again?
Pumba, we just saw it. Maybe tomorrow.
Hey, what are you guys doing? You didn't tell me you were watching the movie. I want to watch, too.
Ma, we just finished. Show's over.
Well, you're just going to have to rewind it.
Ma!
Uncle Max, we're going to watch the movie.
Oh, no. Hey, I brought extra butter.
Hey, you guys are watching the movie?
Any story worth telling is worth telling twice.
What the...
Excuse me.
Excuse me.
Excuse me.
Excuse me.
Excuse me.
Excuse me.
Get out of the way.
Who is this crowd? Hey, down in front.
Gosh.
Aloha.
Yeah.
Watch it. Okay, buddy. You win.
Sure you don't mind.
Hakuna Matata.
Timon, I still don't do so well in crowds.